I'd like to welcome everybody to the fourth ROMcast. Our guest this evening is SliverX, who's famous for his hacks of Dragoon X Omega 1 and 2, as well as a couple translation projects. I'm joined this evening by our other host, Garrett, also known as Pennywise. I'm Troy, Next Gen Cowboy. Pleasure to have everybody listening this evening. So, welcome to the fourth ROMcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So the first question we'll start with this evening for Sliver is, how did you get into ROM hacking and emulation in general?
I was searching for Final Fantasy Legend 2. I actually had the cartridge at that point in time. This would have been summer of 1996. And I ran across somebody's EDU webpage where they had an old copy of Virtual Game Boy DOS along with all three of the Final Fantasy Legend games. It just blew my mind that something like that was possible. I started downloading as many NES and Game Boy games as I could. I only ran a 486 at the time, couldn't do Super Nintendo or Genesis emulation. And the following year, I saw Vengeance on Hell, which was a hack Balls did. I don't know if you know who Balls was. He was an old school translator and hacker. And it was the first hack I'd seen where someone had tried to create a unique story, revamping all the graphics. That was before level design got big, but they did what they could. And that kind of got me curious about if I could do that myself. And I started teaching myself. I found Demi's ROM hack board, which hasn't existed for a very long time. I started lurking there, posting, and about a year later, I released my first hack. It was a shitty Final Fantasy cut and paste into Gauntlet called Final Fantasy Epic. At the same time, I was working on a hack of Dragon Warrior 1, trying to redo it as a total conversion, if you will. And about 8 months later, I was finished with it. And they weren't very good. I'll be honest about that. For the time, I guess they were slightly above par. But looking back, I cringe. I think a lot of people that start in any complex discipline feel that way looking at their early works.
It's certainly not up to what you did later. But at the same time, there are, you know, tools, documentation for stuff like that wasn't readily available at that point, or was less available at that point.
It was very much a dark age.
Did you use Nesticle? Is that your main hacking tool?
It was at the time, yes. Tile Layer, the original, came out, and I started using it. Before Nesticle, you pretty much had XChar, made by a guy named Big Weird, and it was okay, but not very good to use.
So, from what I recall, the old-school ROM hacking tools are pretty shitty.
Yeah, they're not very good. And they're almost all DOS-based, too, so they won't run without tricks nowadays.
We discussed that, actually, last podcast with Lenovus. We discussed, you know, how even nowadays we're still relying on tools that are, you know, DOS-based.
Just out of curiosity, what do you think of the newer ROM hacking tools that the community uses these days?
Oh, they're extremely impressive, particularly for the NES, SCEU XD. Is an amazing piece of software. It was a tremendous help when I hacked Final Fantasy as far as the debugger went and the code data logger, which was very useful for finding level data and such. Once we started breaking Final Fantasy hackster support, we had to start doing a lot of that manually.
If I recall correctly, the older games had a lot of hard-coded stuff, and that's why Final Fantasy hackster probably didn't work for that. Is that correct?
Basically, yeah, if you start changing too much in the way data structures are stored or in how they're interpreted, a lot of editors will just break. They're not built with what you've done in mind, and it conflicts with how it believes it should be interacting with the ROM. So it's usually best to do as much as you can with a level editor if you're going to go really crazy on a hack. Then start doing the really esoteric things once you've got your level layout.
I was also curious about where you hung out as far as like the ROM hacking community was like. I mean, was it mainly an IRC channel or was it like Zofars or something?
Well, there used to be the original, as far as I know, ROM hacking channel was just called ROM Hack, and it was on the old FNet, if I remember correctly. I hung out there. Demi's ROM hack board used to be the central hub where most translators at least collaborated. It was an old WW Threads install. I think Demi was running it on Frognet. Eventually he gave up support for it for whatever reason, I don't recall, and it was actually moved to Zofar's domain. So their original ROM hack board is actually a direct descendant of the first ROM hacking board I know of, and that was Demi's board.
Was the community, was it split up between the ROM hackers and the translators, or were they kind of mixed together?
It was very much two separate fields for ages and ages. I guess it still is to an extent, yeah. Even though both sides have to interact to do any kind of translation. But yeah, you had the translation scene, which Whirlpool covered pretty extensively. You had like Transcore, you know, RPGD. All these translator groups basically were there. And then on the hacking side, you had like Challenge Games and Dragon Eye Studios and Aklum's board. I guess that's how you pronounce that guy's name.
Aklum or something.
Yeah. Those were where most of the non-translator people hung out, and it's usually where I spent my time.
Now, you had mentioned Challenger's Game to me before, but I really have no idea what it is. Can you explain that?
Well, have you heard, what is it, Zelda Challenge? That old Zelda hacked. It's hard as hell, but pretty impressive. It was made by GameMaker24, I think was his handle. Well, he was a member of this group called Challenge Games, and what they did was try to make exceedingly hard versions of classic NES games. I wrote a very early document on how to hack NES games, and their founder, that's how he learned how to ROM hack. And when I lost my web space on Zoom.com, when they shut down, shows you how much of a dinosaur I am, he offered me web space and a chance to join the group. So I moderated their board and was going to do a hack of Dragon Warrior for him. And then a whole bunch of drama happened and that group no longer exists. So.
Oh, drama in the old days. Good times.
I'm sure it was very immature.
Yeah, pretty much. There was a studio we collaborated with and shared the same server with, Dragon Eye Studios. One of their members was Parasite. You may have heard of some of his work. Extremely talented assembly hacker. He did like the Automap and Metroid, several other small things I can think of. But he's the guy that made the debugger in FCE Ultra, which was probably his crowning achievement. But anyway, their leader at Dragon Eye Studios was having a lot of conflict with the Challenge Games half. Another member they had was Thaddeus, who's the guy I did Dragon X Omega 2 with. And he was working on a hack of Final Fantasy for them called Children of Darkness. And when all the fallout happened between us, I'd really rather not go into it. It was just people being, you know, late teenage dickheads. But Thaddeus took the base work in Children of Darkness, and we built Dragon X Omega 2 off of it.
At least something good came from the ashes of all that.
Well, yeah, if he'd never offered that, I never would have made a sequel. So he's basically the father of that hack.
And just for my curiosity, did you have any type of programming background when you got involved in ROM hacking, or did you learn it as you went?
I dicked around with QBasic some in my mid to late teens, never really did anything useful with it. Assembly, I did not learn until like 2005, I think. Everything I did up until then was all pure hex. I took engineering classes in electronics, and when I understood how a CPU and such worked at the base level, assembly just clicked. So I could visualize what I was actually doing to the hardware, and that's when I actually became a competent ROM hacker, in my personal opinion.
The ROM hacking tools in the early days weren't known to be very good. You know, they were pretty crappy. Were there exceptions to this rule and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Thaney was pretty impressive, and the original tile layer was DOS-based. It wasn't until Tile Molester that it became a 32-bit program, if I'm remembering correctly.
I always used Tile Layer Pro after, you know, which was after the original Tile Layer.
That's right, yeah. Pro was the Win32 port of it.
And that always worked for me, although I have no clue if it still works on 64-bit operating systems or what. There's been advancements since then.
Yeah, I typically use YYCHR these days. Up to several years ago. I haven't hacked in years, so.
You said you haven't hacked in years. Do you see yourself ever getting back into it, or is it just something that you don't have time for any longer?
If I were to dedicate the amount of time and just sheer work involved in something like the hacks I've been privy to, I'd want to make an independent, you know, ground-up game.
Fair enough.
What I was thinking about is because Dragoon X Omega 2 is sort of like almost completely original besides the core programming routines, whether or not you could just port that to like C or something, some sort of high-level language running on a computer.
Well, it was kind of amazing what happened to me during the production of Part 2 in that series. I completely started to hate turn-based JRPGs. I think it was the fact of having to make one, like the statistical system even I did from the ground up. It just burned me out on them forever. I can't play them anymore. So if I were to make another game in that series, I think it would be an action RPG, kind of like Ys 4 through 6, except with guns and psionics instead of magic, I guess.
That would be pretty cool, actually.
that would be awesome. Have you ever considered building a something from outside that, or just making an independent game altogether, as you said, from the ground up?
Yeah, I would really like to start from scratch. Even in my later works, there's a lot I'm very unhappy with, at least as far as my contribution goes. Thaddeus did an amazing job at the graphics in part 2, I thought.
Okay, sorry, Garrett. Now we can get back on track.
Well, that's okay. So just going back to the old days again, I guess you had told me that you were a moderator at Whirlpool.
Yeah, I did. Well, I didn't moderate the board, but I did reviews and submissions and would actually go out and try to find updates on translations. Nothing was centralized really at that point. Whirlpool was probably the first attempt I can really think to try to do that. So basically, at first, I was terrible at writing, like composition-wise. So I did some pretty bad reviews at first, got better as time went on, but my interest started waning, and eventually just the whole site shut down, and that was that. And oddly enough, though, a lot of its original content was rolled into romhacking.net when it was created. You'll actually find some of my old reviews still in the system that are from like 2001.
You know, actually, I think I tried to edit some of the original reviews, and I think they're locked in and you can't remove them.
Yeah, it was probably directly imported from the Whirlpool.
So they're pretty much there to stay unless you specifically ask somebody to change it for you.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a technical reason in the board code why that would be. But yeah, I'd say that's what's going on.
I think all of us, or most of us, you know, especially at their young age, were terrible at writing. I know that I look back on old forum posts from 2001 or whatever, and I'm just embarrassed by the way I used to write. So
yeah, it takes a while to master the Queen's English, I guess. but if you do it enough, it does improve. So
right, so I guess that pretty much covers, I guess, most of the questions for the early days, unless you have any more stories and tidbits to share from back then.
I guess the only real thing I could say is just it's amazing how far emulation as a whole has progressed since then. There's things now that I would have never imagined would have happened. You know, systems being emulated to the degree of accuracy they are. It's pretty amazing. It's been a neat ride.
Yes, it has.
So one of your earliest release projects after Final Fantasy Epic was Dragoon X, and I'd like to touch upon both Final Fantasy Epic and Dragoon X, and what were the scope of these hacks, and what ultimately inspired them?
Well, like I said earlier, Balls' Vengeance on Hell hack of Castlevania 2 was my inspiration to try to do total conversion-style hacks. Final Fantasy Epic was mainly, oh, hey, look, Tile Later came out. You can copy and paste graphics. This is awesome, so I made a hack entirely ripping graphics out of Final Fantasy 3, 1, and 2, if I remember correctly. No level editing, no music editing. They were all beyond my capabilities at the time. Dragoon X was to be a proper hack, I guess. I put a lot more effort into it. I actually tried to draw my own graphics, which was a terrible idea. Programmer graphics for sure. And I didn't know how to edit music at that point either. When I did start to figure that stuff out, I remade it 2 years later as Omega. And Omega signified that, hey, this is the last version of Dragoon X. And then I just ended up with a stupid name for part 2, unfortunately. But yeah, basically I wanted to see how far I could push this, you know, without being a programmer. How close did I come to making a game of my own?
Are you proud? No. Are you proud of Dragoon X and Final Fantasy Epic looking back on them, or do you wish that you could have done more at the time?
I really wish I could have done more. I mean, like Final Fantasy Epic, I did a horrible flaw where you can't see the cracked wall graphics, so you have no idea where to break certain tiles, and it's kind of crucial to beating the game. So yeah, I look back at that kind of thing, I realized that I could do a lot better, and thankfully I did as time went on.
You had already mentioned that because of Thaddeus' work on one of his Children of Darkness hacks, that you basically carried it over into Dragoon X Omega 2. But was that the only reason that made you do Dragoon X Omega 2? Was there another reason?
Well, I thought I could do better than Omega 1. He was maybe 10% done with that hack, but just the sprite sheets and such he had at that point were so impressive. Felt like I'd be an idiot not to jump on that opportunity for a project like that.
Just so I'm curious, you pretty much redid everything in the game besides the core program routines. So basically, what was that whole process like?
Well, we started with the music and the graphics. Thaddeus did the graphics. I reverse engineered the music data format. And the way I do that is I've played guitar for 18 years. So I composed the songs on it first. And using, you know, standard musical notation, I translate that into the hex format that the game's using. So I wrote a bunch of songs on my guitar, put them in the game. He did the graphics. Then we started working on the level design and dialogue. And I feel kind of bad that we left the battle engine as the last thing worked on, because it didn't really turn out nearly as well as I'd hoped it would. It could have used more time for sure. Probably one of the hardest things you can do is design a game and play test it, because you have no idea how hard that really would be to somebody just picking it up. You know where everything is, you know how everything is supposed to work. So due to lack of play testing, the balance is very out of whack in that game, to say the least.
That seems to be an issue with a great deal of, you know, with a lot of ROM hacks, just because when you have that, as you said, when you have that knowledge of how the game's supposed to be played, where everything is, you don't look at it from an outsider's perspective or a first-time player's perspective.
Mm-hmm. You have massive respect for people that do the balancing part of RPGs. They're extremely talented at what they do. It's very hard.
I'd like to expand upon the musical aspect, because that's extremely impressive that you were able to do that. How hard was it to reverse engineer the sound engine of, you know, Final Fantasy?
Final Fantasy wasn't too bad. There was already some documentation on the internet about it to get me started. And from that point, within a week, I had everything I needed to know about it done. In earlier games like Dragon Warrior, I would use to take the NSF and randomly corrupt it. And when I would make a change, I would look for that section of data in the ROM. NSF is really a pure extraction of the sound data and driver from an NES game. So what you change here correlates directly to what's in the actual ROM, and I could find things that way.
So just going back to the game, I was curious if you were like the first person to really do a total conversion hack of a game, or there were more people before you doing that.
To the extent that I did it, I don't think so. There were a couple other examples that were never completed. That Akmumlum guy did a hack of Final Fantasy to where it was Mario characters. Music and everything was even done on it, but it was never completed.
That's cool. And just for argument's sake, do you consider Dragoon X2, X Omega 2 your magnum opus?
I would suspect so at this point. I doubt I'll ever have the time or drive to make something that big as far as a ROM hack goes again. So it'll have to do as my magnum opus.
Okay. Jory, can you think of anything else for that? Or
Not particularly. I just want to stress again that it's extremely impressive that he wrote the music for the game.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. So let's talk about the music. You had mentioned that you had played guitar for 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
So just because I'm a fellow guitarist too, what were your influences, favorite bands, musicians?
I mostly like late 60s, early 70s classic rock and early to mid 90s alternative rock for the most part. Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Alice in Chains, Nirvana, those kind of bands I really, really enjoy.
I'd also like to stress that he has awesome taste in music. Oh, my bad. I'm a huge Alice in Chains.
You don't like the 80s hair metal shredding stuff?
Not too much. Like, I like some really weird, obscure 80s bands, like Oingo Boingo was kind of neat for their time. But for the most part, I just kind of gloss over most of the 70s and 80s.
You don't like the band called The Cult?
I don't know if I've heard of them, actually.
Never heard of The Cult? Troy, have you heard of The Cult?
I haven't, but I'd also like to stress that no one lives forever, baby. Awesome taste in music.
Yeah, the 60s and 70s were, I guess, pretty good. You can make the argument that as time goes on, the quality of musician deteriorates, but it's, I don't know.
I'm stepping out of this one. I'm going to leave it up to the musicians to for this one, because I am certainly not one.
Favorite guitarist?
It's kind of a hard one.
Top five, then.
Jerry Cantrell, Jimi Hendrix, of course, Dave Gilmour, Jimmy Page. I mean, there's a lot of other people I could think of, but let me think. One of the, I get Dimebag Darrell. He was pretty impressive.
Jimmy Page was kind of a, I think he was sort of a ripoff guy. He always stole shit.
Well, yeah, pretty much everybody was robbing everybody, blues blind at that point.
He was probably a little more blatant about his stuff, though, I think.
But he did it with style, and that's what was important.
I'm seconding Jerry Cantrell and Dimebag Darrell. I'm also going Randy Rhoads.
Yeah, he was very good.
Well, he's sort of the exception to the norm for the 80s guys.
Yeah, I did like Ozzy's work during the 80s, I will say that. He pretty much stuck to what Black Sabbath was in the old days, so I can listen to it.
Do you like the Ronnie James Dio version of Black Sabbath? Or?
Yeah, they were all right, I guess. I mainly just like their really old stuff. Yeah. So
I like Dio by himself. I was never big on Dio with Black Sabbath.
He was hilarious in the Tenacious D movie, though.
Yes, he was.
When the poster came to life, that was a pretty good scene. Yeah.
As a random anecdote, we had one day to move my friend out of his apartment because he was being kicked out. Mm-hmm. So we blasted Holy Diver for the whole day and just rode around with a dog in the back seat, just moving everything we could get out of there.
I guess that would motivate you.
Yeah, exactly.
They had the most I would say the most bizarre video I've ever seen in my life, where he's walking around in the fur coat with the claymore. I don't know if you've seen that. It's amazing.
I think it's Last in Line does like the post cyberpunk / medieval world. It's just messed up. I don't know how else to explain it.
It's very strange. It's good, but yeah, it's bizarre. It makes anything Tool intentionally tried to make seem bizarre pale in comparison to me.
Sorry, Garrett, I'm siding with him. I like Alice in Chains a lot. Anyway, we're moving up to...
Well, let's continue with the music thing. So continuing on music, we have basically... Well, you see a lot of lists for the best NES music, etc. Since you're sort of like a music person, do you have any personal favorite tracks or soundtracks for games on the NES that you like?
There's a lot to pick from. I guess here's a nerdy anecdote for you. When I was a little kid, 6, 7 years old, my younger brother and I used to hum tunes from Nintendo games. We had to guess which game it came from. So I've been enthralled with it pretty much my whole life. There's a lot to pick from on the NES. I would really have to seriously think and write down a list to give you an honest answer on that.
That's cool.
You're the first first hacker that's really done music that we've had on the ROMcast. So how different is music hacking compared to a regular regular hacking of a game?
Well, the big problem is you typically will never have a tool made to do it. The format between games usually is completely different. It was at the programmer's discretion how to make a game make music. You'll have cases like Konami between Gradius and Castlevania and Castlevania 2. You can tell it's a progression of the same engine. The core of the data format is the same. They just bolted extra features. So in that case, it's easy to move between games, but usually you're starting cold and have to reverse engineer it from the ground up every game you want to deal with. That's what makes it so difficult. There's no lunar magic for editing music.
Because I'm basically a translation hacker, I've never really had to mess with music. And mm-hmm. I understand how you can hack graphics and text and whatnot because it interacts with the CPU and the PPU.
Mm-hmm.
How exactly do you access the music in the game? Is there a certain register that is used? Or?
Well, if you know what you're doing, yes, there are certain registers used in sound generation. It'll let you backtrace where the data is being read from. The data is mostly an abstraction, though, and it's the easiest part and the most important part to know. What defines a note? what defines its tempo, what defines its speed, that kind of thing, will all just be hex. You can understand it as hex. As long as you have a fundamental grasp of how a musical scale works, you can decipher it that way. If you want to go real deep, you'll get into the code parts that define the waveforms and such. Most people don't bother to go that far, though.
Oh, here's something that I thought was really cool. I actually forgot about this. Someone did a homebrew game of Dark Side of the Moon. They basically converted it into NES music and made a ROM out of it. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. I'd love to, though.
Oh, it's really cool. It's some guy called Rain Warrior.
I will definitely Google that.
I think it's on YouTube. Just go on YouTube. It's, I mean, if, since you like that 60s, 70s music, I mean, it's. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it definitely sounds worth checking out. I have to do that when this is over with.
In a previous life, you had a site dedicated to chiptunes called Arc Nova, but these days, not so much. Can you tell us about Arc Nova a bit?
It was the successor to my first site, Panicus.org, which was basically just a bunch of ROM hackers that I hosted their websites, and we had a fairly active message board. I ended up moving across the country, literally sold everything I own, just decided to take a stab at something out west. And I couldn't afford hosting for a couple of months, and no one I hosted could pony up any money, so that died. When I got on my feet again, I made Arc Nova to replace it, and then it kind of mutated into a chiptune archive.
And just you also have various people hosted there now, right? Are any of them actually active, or is it like Arc Nova kind of dead and dormant?
I think Math on Napkins is still working on his Link to the Past editor. And I think Gilgalad still rips NSF files. Other than that, no, I don't think anybody on there is active.
Yeah, Gil is sort of a sad story from what I recall. I think he hurt his back or something. He's been kind of fucked up from that.
Yeah, I heard from him right around that happened, and then he just vanished for ages. I was kind of worried about him.
He's back now.
Yeah, so he seems to be doing a lot better, so that's cool.
Do you ever see yourself taking on another project like that, building a website dedicated to music or anything of that nature?
Possibly, maybe. Definitely hasn't been a priority on my mind for years, so probably not. I used to, like, years and years ago, think web development would be something I'd be interested in, but I fucking hate it, so, to put it lightly. So, yeah, I don't know. Probably not. I hate even having to do it in my line of work, as little as I have to do there. So,
fair enough.
Okay, so we've pretty much covered basic the ROM hacks and the music stuff, but in addition to being a ROM hacker and a music hacker and whatnot, you've also done fan translations. Do you have like a preference for which type of hack you do, or?
I've only done two. I think, I mean, you can kind of consider that Rekka hack a translation, I guess, but really it was Valis and Metal Storm. Valis, I used to think, I've played Valis 3 on Genesis when I was a teenager and absolutely loved the game. Ended up playing all the PC, CD versions. Loved them all. So the NES one, I kept thinking there was something I couldn't understand in the text preventing me from getting past the first level. And called me surprised, you know, halfway through translating, and I just found out the game sucked. So, yeah, it was terrible. It was so bad, I did some assembly hacks to try to make it not so cheap and repetitive.
So when you started the project, then you weren't thinking it was a bad game.
No, I thought there was something lost in translation. You could pop into certain buildings in the city level, and there'd be like a cat that would say something in kanji. And I thought, you know, maybe it's telling me where I need to go. No, it's that game sucks.
So, you know, because, you know, some people don't mind translating games that are bad, like myself, for example. Yeah. But you kind of walked into it blindly, so to speak.
Yeah, and I invested so much at that point. Like, I'd ended up making my own dictionary system and all that, that I just had to finish it. That just would have been too much of a waste of my life
not to complete it.
So.
Past the point of no return on that one. We were gonna ask you, you know, why you took on a shit game, but apparently you didn't know.
Nah, that was a slow process of discovery.
Oh. And so, just out of curiosity, what made you retranslate Metal Storm? Because I think it was Did you retranslate? Is that a retranslation or not?
There was a cinematic completely cut, I guess, for ROM space reasons on the US release. And the final boss taunts you in the Japanese one as you're killing it. That was removed. It just restores those two and puts them in English versus the US release.
And didn't you also like hack the palette too or something?
Yeah, I restored it to the US palette, which a lot of people didn't like. Probably should have made two versions, but at that point, that was my last ROM hack ever. So I just started a very big job, had no time, never got around to it.
Well, I guess they're lucky you translated in the first place then.
Yeah. I'm sure that changed a lot of lives and all. You know, basically, I'm at my most prolific when I don't have much to do, and that certainly changed in the past 6 years. Unemployment stints were great for my ROM hacking productivity, but yeah, I haven't been unemployed in a long time now. So
I brought this up last ROMcast, but what I envision is Garrett and I are eventually going to open a retirement home for ROM hackers. Mm-hmm. So that way, when everybody retires, just going to get a lot of shit done.
Yeah. And then I guess at that point, you know, hacking the NES would be like somebody building the world's greatest telegraph or some shit.
So that's a fair point.
Beyond archaic at that period in history. So.
See, I never took that into consideration. I guess I fail again. I'm going to have to throw out the retirement for ROM hacking idea. This is terrible. My dreams have been shattered.
Probably better off building a time machine or something.
That's a good point, actually. I'll get on that tomorrow. One thing I wanted to address was, could you explain what an NSF file is?
NSF is basically the initialization for the audio hardware, followed by the driver, which defines the waveforms and such of the sounds, and then all the data that it reads, directly ripped from the ROM. It does require assembly knowledge to make it only load the driver and to have like a track list usually. But yeah, it's a direct rip of the soundtrack of a Nintendo game. There are also several other formats for other systems like that. Most like PSF and SPC files are really just logs of the sound data, so they're not actually the direct code.
And thank you for the explanation.
Was there something else, Troy? Or
I was going to ask him if he had another ROM hack that he enjoyed or played other people's ROM hacks.
No, I was actually going to ask that, but you can ask it.
Okay, you're welcome to.
Oh, I'm eating, so you can ask it.
Okay. And one other question I have is, do you play other people's ROM hacks, or has there ever been another hack that you particularly enjoyed?
Yeah, I really liked Castlevania Chorus of Mysteries. Dr. Mario and Optimon did that one. For the most part, usually I just played translations. Really enjoyed Gideon's Royal Stone translation he did at the end of last year. Also played Pennywise's Mad City translation recently, which was, it was amazing that Bayou Billy was, you know, playable at some point in its development. So,
well, here's the thing. It wasn't recently. It was about, unless you played it recently, because it came out like 4 years ago.
Well, yeah, I just played it about a year ago, maybe.
A year ago. Yeah, so for the folks that don't know, Mad City was the original Japanese version of Bayou Billy. And for some reason, they made the difficulty insanely hard, for whatever reason. And so I basically retranslated the original Japanese version, which is a much more sane game.
Yeah, it's almost like their prototype of what they did to Contra Hardcore. Made the U.S. reversion or release way more ridiculous than the original.
I wasn't aware of this. I played Hardcore, and I really... Oh, wait, is it they did the three live system versus the... Huh.
Yeah, they used to have a hit point meter in
that's
the Japanese
right. That
release.
Is right. I do remember that. Okay. Well, I thought I was losing my mind there for a second. My apologies.
And so you haven't bothered to play any more turn-based RPGs?
For the most part, no. Royal Stone, though, that's a strategy RPG.
That's different.
Because I used to love Final Fantasy Tactics. I put so many hundreds of hours into that game. That was really the last strategy game I really enjoyed. I did like the Shining Force games, though.
We talked about that with one of this.
Yes, we did. I used to have a Genesis. I never had a Super Nintendo when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So the only way I could play Super Nintendo was going up to my cousin's house. But I played the hell out of some Shining Force.
It was a really good series. Much better than Shining in the Darkness, the first one.
I agree.
I like that one.
Yeah, it was like a wizardry ripoff, and I hate wizardry.
See, so. I love wizardry, but even I didn't like Shining in the Darkness.
One of my favorite Saturn RPGs is Shining the Holy Ark, which is basically an upgraded version, yeah, which I love that game. Though.
Remake, isn't it?
Well, not really. It's sort of an original game.
Oh, fair enough. I never played that one, so.
It's a first-person RPG, like wizardry and stuff like that, but in the Shining universe.
Yeah, I haven't played too many Saturn games. I never owned one, never knew one that had one, and only recently did emulation for it get passable.
So you haven't played the translations of the Shining Force 3 episode 2s and 3s and whatnot?
No, I played some of the Panzer Dragoon games, that terrible version of Symphony of the Night, and Radiant Silver Gun and Knights into Dreams. I can literally list that's all the Saturn games I've ever played.
That's all you really need. I'm just
Well, here's the thing, because the Shining Force 3 is on the Saturn, and those Shining Force 3 games are so good. They're like some of the best games you could probably play in the series. They blow Shining Force 1 and 2 out of the water.
I have to give them a spin sometime on SSF then.
Oh, very good, but there's some issues. Like, you have to beat all the ones previously to it to unlock the later parts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, no, there's three episodes. There's episode 1, 2, and 3. Episode 1 was officially released in the US, but 2 and 3 were never, so there's like a translation project. Did you play Gideon's SE Super Famicom version of Tactics Ogre? Did you ever like that game?
I never did play it. I knew Final Fantasy Tactics was sort of based on it, but I never got around to actually trying it. I did play Ogre Battle briefly, and I didn't really care for it.
Well, they're pretty much different games, pretty much.
It also has a PlayStation release by, I think Atlas published it back in the day.
From what I remember, it's the same developers for Tactics.
It is the same developers for Tactics, yeah. They did both games.
So if you like Tactics, then you probably like Tactics Ogre.
Yeah, I'll have to give it a spin sometime.
Which leads us to our next question. Do you still have time to play games, or do you still enjoy playing games?
On occasion, I did have a phone called the Sony Ericsson Xperia Play, if you're familiar with what those were. They're basically an Android phone with a slide-out gamepad. I was addicted to that thing for like 6 months when I first got it. You could play up to PS1 level stuff if you overclocked it a bit. It broke. It's a slider phone. Those things inevitably break. So other than that, I play emulators on occasion. I built a media machine. It's kind of like a PS3 clone based on x86 hardware. And it's constantly connected to my TV, but usually just watch TV shows and such on it. I do break out MAME on it on occasion, though.
We did want to ask you about your media center, if you wanted to go in depth on that.
Sure. A friend of mine got a PS3 around 2008, and I was impressed with a lot of what Sony came up with, but thought I could do a lot more. At the time, the only small form factor systems you could get were Atom boards in a mini ITX form factor. So the processor was pretty slow, even though it overclocked at 400 megahertz. But I built a stripped-down version of Windows XP 64-bit, loaded directly into a media center front-end called GameEX, and it basically had 46 systems set up to be emulated. GameEX was originally a MAME front-end, so it handled naming those and such and merged sets properly. I ended up writing close to 1,000 batch scripts that would do things like rip DVDs and CDs and put them in appropriate folders and name them, that kind of thing. I could also copy PS1, Sega CD, Saturn games, all just by clicking a couple of menu options. I ended up putting 2 years of work into it. And
That's crazy. That must have been one of your main hobbies.
Yeah, I worked on it for ages. Usually I have to be doing some kind of technical project at all times, or I just don't feel right. So I guess that's my version of tinkering with shit. So some people just have to be constantly doing it. And yeah, that was my big project for a couple of years. I haven't touched it in several, but who knows? There's a lot of really neat small hardware out that's much quicker nowadays. I'm sure I could build something sweeter.
Do you have anything to add, Troy? Or
no, you want to continue?
Okay, I'll continue. So from what I know from talking with you and interacting with you on the forums and whatnot, mm-hmm. I know that you had more projects planned, but real life kind of got in the way of those things. Can you give us some details on some of your canceled stuff or stuff you might have liked to hack?
That one song that you mentioned that I sent you a link to, Dish, if you know who he is, he made an NES emulator called Spoon and created Final Fantasy Hackster, the tool for Final Fantasy 1. He converted Castlevania 1 to the VRC6 Konami mapper, which gives you 3 extra sound channels among a lot of other technical benefits. I was doing the soundtrack for a guy that was building a hack on that. Then we both kind of lost interest and nothing came of it. I was also going to hack Castlevania 2 with Thaddeus. We made some preliminary work on it. Real life kind of reared up for both of us simultaneously, so it just went nowhere. I don't even have any of my old files for it.
So let's just say for the sake of argument that Thaddeus magically reappears and says he wants to do the project. Would that be something you'd be open to, or
possibly, maybe? It really just depends. I'm a lot busier nowadays than I was even 3 years ago. I'm going to school, working, and raising a family all at the same time, so there's not much room in there.
Well, there's always, what do you say, ROM hackers have nothing but limited time to work on things.
It does help.
I mean, you could work on it till you're like 60.
Yeah, but then even at that point, I don't even know if I would care about it anymore, yeah. Let alone the world at large.
So you might be surprised that I actually remember this, but I think a long time ago that you said that you would have hacked and translated a game by the name of Rusty if you could have a debugger to break the compression for the game.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that was a surprisingly decent Castlevania clone I thought was worth some effort.
I don't think, Troy, do you know what Rusty is?
I have no clue. I have to admit, I've never heard of it.
Okay, so it's a Castlevania clone for the PC-98, and it's basically Castlevania, but your main character is, I think, literally a dominatrix with a whip.
And I have to say,
I mean, a scantily clad traditional dominatrix with a whip.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's not pornographic or anything.
It plays surprisingly well for being on the system it is.
If anybody could translate that game, that would be pretty cool in my opinion. But being the obscurity of the system and the game, it's unlikely to happen.
Yeah, probably, I would say.
I am going to look this up when we're finished here this evening, I'm just saying.
So I wanted to go back to when you had said that when learning ASM clicked for you.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember a similar moment. It was when I learned how to use a debugger, pretty much. It was when it all clicked for me.
Mm-hmm.
But before that point, for me, it was what the hell am I doing, more or less. Sort of muddling my way through things, not really understanding what I was doing. It took me like a few years to finally get a hang of it. But I guess for you, it was quicker because you had the classes that you took that for the CPU hardware stuff.
Oh, well, fully the first half of my career, I had no knowledge of assembly. It was all just muddling through hex. Basically, then I happened to go to school for one of my degrees and it was engineering related, and then assembly clicked. I tried to learn it several times over the years. I just could never wrap my head around it, but knowing the physical half of it, it all made sense to me. Everything before DX02, I had no assembly knowledge.
Okay, and I think that's really the only thing that I had maybe tried to expand upon.
When we're talking about programming in general, and you obviously have a lot of knowledge about computers, both the hardware and the software, what is your preferred language to work in?
I really do like assembly for the amount of crap you have to do to even do the smallest thing. It's elegant in its simplicity. I've dabbled in C a little bit. I do a lot of shell scripting, though, for both Windows and Unixes. That's probably the language I've done more than anything in, is a bash and batch and PowerShell.
And you're comfortable with all of these at this point?
Oh, yeah. I can do a lot of things with them. Makes my job a lot easier to be able to automate it.
Speaking of your job, you happened to tell me that you were a systems administrator, which I guess people can look up what exactly that is, but I was curious if ROM hacking had an impact on your career and how you got your job and how you do your job and whatnot.
Well, it helps with pattern recognition and procedural jobs, like for troubleshooting. I do a lot of network-related things. I can look at packet captures in like a Wireshark-type program, and staring at hex for years helps me make sense of patterns in it, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense to me. That's one of the only things I've really picked up from ROM hacking is, you know, when you stare at hex for a long time, you start to see that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely helped me think abstractly with technology and to maximize what I can do within a set of limits.
Were you constrained when you did Dragoon X Omega 1 and 2?
The first one was very much done within the limitations. I mean, if you're familiar enough with Dragon Warrior, all the subquests and everything are recognizable from the original, even though I shuffled them around. The second one, we were able to break a lot of the restrictions of the game, particularly in the sheer size of level data we were able to fit into it. And I was able to make custom items by writing routines, hijacking items that we didn't use in the game, that sort of thing.
Did you expand the ROM for the second game?
No, actually, it's all within the original constraints. 256K is how big Final Fantasy I was.
Most people, when they do NES hacking, they think that, especially if they don't exactly know all the technical details, they think that ROM expansion is pretty much impossible or very hard. Was that the case for you, or did you ever figure that out?
Well, back in the old days, nobody really knew how to do that. It was considered virtually impossible until the mid-2000s. I'd say there was enough documentation and debugging tools and such available to where people started pulling that kind of thing off. We were definitely thinking about it towards the end of it, but we really just wanted to get it done and never move to that kind of level with it.
Ultimately, it wasn't required, so that's awesome too.
Yeah.
So I guess we can do the anticipated subject, I guess. I told Troy a story from what I heard in the IRC channel about some person.
Goodness gracious.
I don't know if you were there, but there was somebody who came onto the romhacking.net IRC channel.
Mm-hmm.
Asking to be unbanned from the forums because they had been harassing another member and sending death threats via PM.
Oh, wow. No, I don't recall this.
And this person said he was autistic and that the reason why he had been harassing the member and sending death threats was that he was like sick and he was puking in bed and stuff, something stupid like that. And he wanted to be unbanned and whatnot. And I guess he got reported to the police because he had sent death threats.
Yeah, wow, yeah, I'd never heard about that.
I should preface this all by saying Garrett's not very politically correct, whereas I'm a very diplomatic kind of person. So this is all him.
But anyway, so what I had heard from somebody, another ROM hacking members, that quite a few of the people who are involved in the ROM hacking community are generally either part of the autism spectrum to some degree or not, or they're just assholes and jerks and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So can you share some experiences with you and what you think about that?
Well, I guess inevitably in something as obscure and technical as ROM hacking, autistic types will gravitate towards it just because, you know, it's sheer logic and such. And you'll have assholes in any internet group.
I agree with that.
Well, emulation in particular is kind of like the old wares scene with PC games. You get a lot of young people that just, they see free games and that's all they want. They don't care by any means or how socially ungraceful they go about it. I think anything that involves a slight twinge of software piracy to it will draw that kind of crowd regardless.
Now, you had told me that at one point you had become a troll to those people on the ROM hacking message boards or whatever.
Yeah, I went through a spell for a while where I just got mean. I do regret it, but but yeah, I was just getting very fed up with some people, particularly that would always show up in the IRC channel I used to run. And yeah, I said some not very nice things. So live and learn, I guess. I didn't really mean any of it, if that means anything in the long run. So
just, I actually did one of the, what I considered ultimate troll news posts. Probably it was about, I think, last spring. I had announced the translation of Megumi Tensei for the NES.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And I said on the news post that it was complete, but that nobody could play it.
Yeah, you missed the release date or something. I had to wait for the next year to roll around, if I remember. Yeah.
But really, the whole point of it was to basically, because the person who I was working with the project on, Esper Knight, is an old school hacker. Uh-huh. And he had this whole group. And so basically we had just a shout out to the old members. It was pretty much the point of the news post. And the fuck with the Megumi Tensei fans who are fucking ridiculous. So.
Yeah, I haven't met too many of them. But if they're like some other subgenre game groups I've met, then I can imagine.
You know, they want to play Megumi Tensei, Super Robot Wars, that whole crap.
Mm-hmm.
See, I happen to play a lot of SMT games, you know, Garrett. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm saying that, but some of them are pretty bad. I mean,
oh well, there's some in every group that are bad, though. You know, well, I know I don't blame you for the troll post because I thought it was hilarious. But every like Sliver said, in every subgenre of the internet or every community in the internet, you're gonna have to, the anonymity just allows for people to be dicks.
Yeah.
Entitled dicks at that, usually.
Which I will say there's two fan bases, and the SMT fan base is one of them. The other is the Final Fantasy fan base, but that might just be because that's what I see the most of. Those are two very entitled groups of people. My groups of people, I'll point out, but still entitled jerks sometimes. Some of them. Diplomacy.
Well, it's unavoidable, I think. It's just human nature.
I agree. You can't punch people over the internet. That's the thing.
You can't. There's some great stories about that, though. I mean, like, if you know where the person lives, like, there was somebody who came to a kid's house and, like, strangled them.
What the hell? Well, that's worse, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
I think there was somebody who called the SWAT team on somebody from on the internet or something, called the police on him and said he was a drug dealer or some shit.
Oh, Jesus H.
Mason. Oh, yeah, that's that security researcher, Brian Krebs, I think is his name. I remember reading that story. Apparently some of the people he was pissing off by, you know, fighting malware did that to him.
Yeah. Good times. This is up to you, Sliver, if you want to share any of these, but do you have any, like, other hobbies outside of ROM hacking that you'd like to share?
I'm a musician, I guess. I haven't played live in years, but I do still occasionally write. And I own a bass guitar and a normal guitar. I can play both.
So what did you play live in, like, an open mic night or, like, in front of a crowd of people in, like, a small stadium or something?
You know, like bars and clubs.
Bars and clubs.
When I lived in California, I played a lot of street corners and subway stations. Actually made pretty good pocket money for California, I guess. It helped. That was about the only thing I didn't sell when I moved out there was my guitar, my clothes.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was worth a shot, I guess. I didn't really like California. It was the Bay Area. So I ended up going back where I came from after about a year and a half. But I learned a lot. It was an interesting experience. And I actually met Math on Napkins out there one time. We went bar hopping and got so obliviated I couldn't remember how to get home. It was a sweet night. We saw Jim Jefferies live at a club. That was sweet, if you know who that comedian is.
That's a good story.
Yeah, that's a good story.
Yeah, he's pretty much the only person from IRC or ROM hacking I ever actually met in person. He was out there interviewing for a job, and we just met up and got hammered.
So I guess to wrap up then, Troy?
Okay, well, just the first thing we like to do when we wrap up an interview is ask for, do you have any advice that you'd like to give to people that are just starting out with ROM hacking or, you know, fan translation, or even people that have been around a long time?
Read everything you can. At least try to have like a fundamental understanding of things before you ask questions. You'll get a lot more help that way if people know that you've at least made that initial effort to immerse yourself in it. That would be my number one recommendation for sure.
Okay. And you had mentioned that you were extremely impressed with the advancements in the emulation, especially the accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to the for the ROM hacking community, what do you think about the future of the community? Are you satisfied with it, or do you think there can be improvements made?
Well, I think system complexity is getting to the point where it's just going to be just too difficult for even a small group of people to do a significant hack on current generation stuff. In that case, I guess ROM hacking eventually will just dwindle out as the people that care about these older systems get so old that even they stop playing it. It's kind of sad, but that seems to be the way it's going. And it's a technical hurdle, not a cultural one or anything.
So you see a bleak future for the ROM hacking community?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think it'll be around, at least in the way it was around for the past 15 years, for another decade. Things will just be too crazy to do anything with, on a large scale at least.
Yeah.
That's depressing. Do you have anything you'd like to add or share that we might have missed?
Nothing particular. I mean, I can think of a bunch of stupid stories about people nobody remembers anymore, but I won't bore you with any of that.
If you'd like to go into it and you've got the time, we're fine for most of it.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Most of it's just scene drama that just seems so trite thinking about it now.
Understand.
So, I guess at least the scene has grown up quite a bit in the past 10 years. So I guess everybody's approaching 30 pretty much, or well past it at this point.
I just had my 28th birthday, so I feel ancient at this point.
Well, time marches on.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Well, I just think about it, and it's been 13, 14 years since, you know, I remember the Whirlpool, and it's just messed up to think in that, you know, concept of time.
Yeah, it's been a very long time. Like I said, I got involved with around 2001, I think. And hell, that's 15 years almost. So
have you almost reached a point where you don't really care anymore? Or
about ROM hacking?
Yeah, ROM hacking.
Well, actually doing it, yes. I still play hacks on occasion. More translations than anything, though. Although I do love things like easy hacks or balance adjustments for things. Those will usually get a quick spin, but mostly anymore, I play arcade games with infinite quarters. You know, you can beat most arcade games in a half hour, so they're perfect for me at this point in my life. So I do play games, just mostly old ones, and I still play hacks. I just don't do it myself anymore.
You still seem to give, you know, advice when it's warranted. Is that something you think you'll continue to do?
Oh yeah, I mean I'm still interested in it. It's just
the lack of thought. Yeah.
Sorry. And my time's passed. I think I did some okay projects, so at least I left a legacy of sorts, I guess.
Garrett, anything else?
I think that's it.
Okay, well then, Sliver X, we'd like to thank you immensely for taking the time to do this ROMcast with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for joining us.
All right, you all have a good night.
You have a nice evening as well.
Night. Later.